Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Nancy C. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. Today is Tuesday, the 25th of February, the last Tuesday of the month. And today we're reading from the Big Book. We're on page 80, the fifth paragraph, starting with the chances are and reading through that one paragraph. And today's readers, and thank you for your service, Team Tuesday, for all month. On the paragraph is Nancy P. Closing us out today is Jane S. And our beloved backup is Lynn S. And then our newcomer greeter is Ann A. And the host for the second hour is Leah S. Thank you, everyone, for your service this month. The reference numbers for yesterday, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 22,191. That's 22191. And for the 10 a.m. meeting is 22,192. That's 192. Our preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members, and we are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. And our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive eating, overeating can recover through the abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of the Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Michelle J. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Michelle J. from Texas. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's been my pleasure to serve this month. Thanks, I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle J. And now Kathy C. will read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, family. Number one, it's Kathy from New York. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I was great. I am grateful to do service here. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy C. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirements for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We're on page 80, the fifth paragraph, and I will ask Nancy P. to please kick us off. Nancy, please read with us.
Good morning, Nancy. Nancy P., good morning, everybody. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. The chances are that we have domestic trouble. Perhaps we are mixed up with a woman in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubted if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband might begin to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Nancy, you'll time me, please. I've been married this year. I'll be married 37 years and together for 3 years before that. So 40 years with my husband. And, I've never cheated on him, but I was not present for him when he, wanted physical or emotional intimacy. I was always thinking about my next fix. As an addict, I always needed my drugs. And, at night he'd say, it's time for bed, I'm going up, are you coming to bed? And I'd mumble, just finish this one last thing, read this chapter, whatever, I got something to do. And I'd hear him, getting ready for bed. And then the bedroom door would close. I'd wait 15 more minutes, and then I would go into the kitchen and start my nightly, the old nightly review that is now not that. The nightly review that I do now is nothing like that. And, we never would have gotten divorced, but he is a loyal man. He is true blue. He loves me. And I put our marriage through a lot of unnecessary stress. And, when I went through this process, I was told to write down ideals, and I did. What kind of a mother do I want to be of a son, and what kind of a daughter, and what kind of a wife, and what kind of a neighbor, and, coworker, supervisor, like that. And with when I wrote about my husband, I wanted to be, you know, a helpmate, a equal partner in this relationship. I wanted to be, an enthusiastic sexual partner, you know, all that. I wanted to have a healthy life. But it took time for all that to happen because, you know, I didn't want to be inconvenienced by the responsibilities, those responsibilities that are now my ideal. They are both privileges, rights, and responsibilities for both of us. And, you know, today my life with him is unbelievable. When I think about what I absolutely was going to end up with, my two most significant relationships before I met my husband, one was with a convicted felon that was on parole from a maximum security prison in Florida, 25 and 5, and the other one was with a guy that was going to hit me, and both hadn't yet but would have. And that was while I was in program, abstinent, thin, you know, all the rest of it. That was my best thinking. And I'm agnostic, everybody knows that, but there are two things that could convince me to get on board with the God thing. One of them is when I work with other people, and the other one is when I look at my husband. How lucky am I to have this guy love me no matter what? And, when I recovered, I was walking up and down in my dining room, and I'll wrap up with this, saying, I have never felt this way. Yep, I will. I'll wrap up with this. I have never felt this way. This is unbelievable. I can't believe it. You know, when I was going on, and I turned around really fast, he was finishing his dinner, and I said, have you noticed? And he waits 10 seconds. And finally, he just nods. That's it. I don't even think he said yes. And that was it. That was, 7 years ago. And my life has only gotten better, and I have one thing and one thing only to attribute it to. Say it with me, everybody. Surrender, surrender, surrender. The best is still yet to come for me. And with that, I'll pass.
Hey, thank you for getting us going, Nancy. Appreciate your service for the whole month. And I'm going to take a list of names for people who want to share on this paragraph. But first, let me remind you that we do value everyone's opinion and we love hearing from everyone. But if you have shared with the group in the last 2 days, which would be Friday or Monday, please step back and let other people have an opportunity to share as well. So who would like to talk?
Lisa B. in South Carolina.
Elena B. in South Carolina.
Elena C.
Claire E. in the UK.
Claire E.
Amy M.C. in Massachusetts.
Amy M.C.
Did you get me, Nancy? Christina J.
No, wait, now I have you, Christina. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have Lisa B., Elena C., Claire E., Amy M.C., and Christina J. Anybody else want to get into this first lineup? Okay, well, let's start with this. Lisa B., you have the floor, followed by Elena C., and if you're not Lisa, please press star 1 to mute your phone.
Yeah, that wasn't me clearing my throat. Good morning. My name is Lisa B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm in South Carolina, and I do spell my name L-E-S-A. This paragraph, I have to admit, at first I just thought, you know, because I like to share once a week, and this is the day that I'm able to share on. But, you know, after prayer and meditation and listening to others, and I really was able to get some clarity. I have a lot to share on this paragraph. First of all, it's telling me that I'm going to have domestic problems if I'm in my disease. You know, chances are there are domestic troubles. And yes, so I didn't cheat on my husband. My husband hasn't cheated on me. But I was the one that was resentful and uncommunicative, not my husband. I was in the food. I was consumed with the love of my, I always said chocolate chip cookies was like the love of my life. And, it says here that the husband feels sorry for himself. I felt sorry for myself. I had so much self-pity, and yet I blamed I blamed everything on my husband. So this 12-step way of life, being free of the food, it's just amazing what has opened up for me. If I had known life would be so good, being abstinent and being recovered, I wish I had done it sooner, but it happened the way it was meant to happen. So of the 32 years of marriage, 9 of those I've been abstinent and recovered. And many, many of those years I was not, and caused a lot of harm just by being consumed. But yet I was so blind because I really thought it was all him and my childhood and all this other stuff. There's a better set of problems that happen in recovery. You know, the problems that come up in recovery today are just so much better than the way they were being in the food and being blocked. The steps will help me in any area of difficulty. Having a relationship with my creator is going to help me in any area of my recovery. The continuous inventory, I have to look at myself. I can't be looking at my husband. I have to look at myself. And, you know, cheating, anytime there's cheating, and I have to look at today, where am I cheating? You know, am I cutting corners at things at work? Am I trying to take too much from every moment rather than giving? You know, that's something I can do. I'm very self-centered. I can go to self-pity and self-absorption so easily. And that's why I love this 12-step way of life and this continuous work of looking at, you know, where am I falling short, and having these values and all of a sudden my mind went blank. But anyways, it's perfect timing. I'm so glad to be here. I'm so grateful for this way of life. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Lisa B. with an E from South Carolina, another South Carolina. Let's hear from Elena C. Elena, you have the floor.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning from South Carolina. Well, I have not been attending this meeting 7 o'clock in a while. I listen to other meetings, but it's so good to be back. And what came up for me as I was reading this paragraph, the fact that I believed that alcohol somehow, since it's giving you more of a buzz and more you can do things that otherwise you wouldn't do, you know, the behavior is worse of an alcoholic than that of a compulsive overeater. But that's not so. That is not so. Because an addiction is an addiction. You know, and the main problem of an addiction of an addict that's in his mind. And the healing doesn't start, I mean, the healing does not mean the stopping of the substance, you know, like, yes, we have to start with entire abstinence. Yes, we have to put those triggering foods down, or the alcohol down, or the other thing down, right? Because there's so many more addiction in the world than just alcohol, and so many more. There's so many addiction, and that all can create the same behavior that is destructive to ourselves and others. And so once we do the entire abstinence, then, you know, what we need to work on the steps. We need to admit how powerless we are over everything, over our addiction especially, and then reach out and find a power greater than ourselves that will create an entire psychic change, that our higher power is going to, like, slowly and gentle embrace our brain, embrace my being in my case, and we'll connect some wires that somehow were not right. You know, like the red wire connected with the blue, or the pink connected with, you know, the purple. And the entire psychic chains are the wire connecting the red with the red, the blue with the blue, the way they were supposed to be. So then we could perform God's work in this world, which is to be helpful for others, to take care of ourselves first.
And this a reminder
that this program of recovery is a self-care with the purpose of being of service for God's children. And without pass, thank you.
Thank you, Elena C. from South Carolina. And next up, we have Claire E. from the UK, followed by Amy M.C. Claire, please share with us.
Thank you, Nancy. It's great to hear you. And thank you to everyone that's doing service. My name's Claire E. I'm a recovered compulsive eater and bulimic in the UK. It's a great paragraph. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Well, you think, you know, it's like, and that's my experience in recovery too, is that, you know, this is coming on to the part of the book for me that sort of describes the sort of living amends. And I, like other speakers, I've been married for quite a long time now, and I haven't had issues with infidelity, not mine or his, thank goodness. Certainly was a part of my life where I had that, in terms of in my early 20s when I was very actively in my bulimia. I was very promiscuous, and relationships didn't really mean that much to me. I was constantly trampling over those lines. But that has, you know, that hasn't been part of my marriage. But, you know, there's all sorts of things in this paragraph that are very relevant to my domestic life. You know, my eating, my binge eating, my starving did complicate sex relations. I was very withdrawn, very didn't want any sort of interaction on that front. Like the first speaker, I'd much rather have been in the food. I used to stay up at night rather than going to bed in order to eat alone. I didn't want people touching me. I didn't want people near me. Or I completely the other way. And I was looking, you know, sort of looking for the sort of validation and affirmation in sort of contact that I didn't really want, really. So there was all sorts of behaviour on that front that wasn't great. And these days, I think, you know, I was looking at the rest of the paragraph, and what's sort of coming to me as well is you know, that my behaviour, you know, what is it like to live with me? You know, worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. And I can get, you know, very upset about that, I suppose. But it's kind of like I always have to look at what is it like to live with me? I think probably the most way I can relate to this bit at the moment is this sort of secret and exciting affair with the girl that understands. That's kind of me with a fellowship sometimes. You know, I would rather be in a meeting or at a convention or with my fellows than I would do sort of doing the nitty gritty at home and being present in my relationship at home. And that does arouse jealousy and resentment. And I do have to look at that sometimes about the balance of how I spend my time and my priorities and, you know, giving back to my relationship at home some of the recovery, you know, that I have from this program. So yeah, it's relevant. It's very much relevant to me. Is how I do. I'm in the middle of doing another step five at the moment, and part of that obviously is to have done another sex inventory, looking at my relationships and looking at my ideals. And you know, even in recovery, it's really quite grounding and sobering to look at, you know, the way I behave in my relationship, the way I can be quite critical and controlling and reactive and dishonest. Thank you. So yeah, the constant question to me is how am I behaving? What's it like to live with me? And I'll leave it there. Thank you. I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Claire E. from the UK. And next up we have Amy M.C. followed by Christina J. and then we'll take another lineup. Amy, please share with us.
Good morning, everyone. This is Amy M.C. from Massachusetts, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Gosh, so much comes up for me with this paragraph. Of course there's domestic problems at home, you know, and as some other folks have shared, what really resonates with me here in this paragraph is those ideals, because here's the truth of the matter. My disease centers in my mind. And so I think in my relationship, and I'm going through a divorce right now, I thought in my relationship that my ideal was that I could, and it sounds so funny to say all that, but that I could have enough recovery to help this person along their path. That was my diseased thinking. The food was down in the relationship. I hadn't paid. And I was ignoring that the relationship didn't work at all. And I was trying to play God in this relationship and in this person's life and in my life. And I had to be reminded of the comment from my ex that he thought I would grow out of OA. I thought this food thing, yeah, that you wouldn't have to do that anymore after you were with me for a while. And, you know, so here we both were with our diseased thinking. I thought I could help him. He thought he could help me. No, this disease centers in my mind. So what happens when the food's down? Then my mind wants to, like, find something else to think about. And so maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's shopping. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. Oh, God. But for the grace of God, I get to make ideals, right? So I get to seek God's will for me. What would a healthy relationship look like for me, God? Well, what has come up over the course of my relationship is that this is not a healthy relationship. The foundation is not solid because we both are making each other into a God of sorts, and that doesn't work. I need my God not to be food, not to be a relationship, but to be God. And it's only when I am centered in God that I can hear him lead me towards my destiny helpers. So that, yes, when conflict arises in a relationship, as it does, I bring it back to God. I don't think I can fix manager control. The other person knows they can't fix manager control. But we have this commonality. We have a center in God because we're human. I'm human. Let me speak for myself. I'm human, and I have a diseased mind. My mind wants the food. I'll wrap up. It wants to obsess. It wants to fix, manage, and control. That's not what this is about. Only in recovery through these 12 steps and by the grace of God can I have clear thinking and ask God to show me that healthy relationship. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Amy MC from Massachusetts. Next up, we're going to have Christina J from North Carolina. And after Christina, we're going to take another list of names. So let me just remind people, if they got on late, we are on page 80 in the big book, the fifth paragraph, starting with the chances are. So Christina, please share with us.
Morning, Nancy. Morning, everyone. Christina J. in North Carolina. Wow, this is such a twisted topic for my little subconscious and consciousness, because starting out as a young little girl between the ages of 1 and 5 and on into in teenage years, I got extremely conflicting information about relationships from the abuse that was going on in my young life. Seeing my mother getting abused, some sexual abuse I experienced, and some rejection that was very harsh, as some of you have heard me share. So my dis-ease started with needing validation, needing love from someone I just couldn't get it from. You know, I just couldn't get it, and I wanted it so badly throughout my life. And my first marriage, I married my mother and my father, and all the myriad things of being young and being married, and my disease wasn't in full rampant, the food part of the disease wasn't in full rampant control yet, but it slowly became that way because the relationship shivered up and became dry on all levels, spiritual, emotional, and physical. And I wanted love and I wanted validation, and I had good moral character as a kid, you know. And I had what I call a relationship with God. And I wanted to walk as a godly girl, a godly woman. But I found myself in the arms of someone else. I was very susceptible to male attention. And because of the rejection I'd had and what I wasn't getting at home, the smart thing would have been to take my husband to therapy and try to work things out. But, you know, I'm not smart when I'm in disease. I want what I want when I want it. And I had people friends that would justify what I was doing. That affair was found out, and the pain was excruciating. I don't have to sit around today and figure out good moral character and what I need to do in a relationship. I know it's not to step out. In my latest husband, my final husband, I hope, has accepted me on all levels, all shapes and sizes throughout our almost 20-year marriage now. And in that, he has given me the freedom to walk in my disease and work on healing it without having to think that I have to please him with some skinny body. He has held space for me. He was a former addict, still is an addict, of course, alcohol. He knows about the program. So God gave me somebody that could walk the fire of addiction with me. And, you know, I have good moral character today, and I'm still susceptible to attention from males. That's an old, deep wound. But I begin to immediately chant the name of God and to pray and to work through that, because I will not hurt him. I will not hurt myself anymore. Those affairs hurt deeply. It cut deep into my moral character and my heart. And I don't have to blame myself for them, because I was in dis-ease from wounds that I experienced as a little girl, and I knew no better. So,
gentle reminder.
Thank you. This program is wonderful for healing all those deep places in ourselves. So love you all, and I pass.
Hey, thank you very much, Christina J. And I'm going to take another list of names. But before I do, let me remind you, you've been hearing it every week. In November 7th, 8th, and 9th, the Power of the Big Book weekend is going to happen. That's in 255 days. In Newark, New Jersey, all of the information can be found on the website of visionforyou.info. That's www.avision4info.info. And please make sure you sign up, register early. We're getting a lot of registrations in, so be one of those people, and we look forward to seeing you in November. So let's get back to the study of the big book. We're on page 80, the fifth paragraph, and I'll take another list of names.
George,
yeah,
hello.
L in Connecticut.
I didn't
Shana
hear
C.
anybody.
Laura,
Arian.
Arian.
I heard Shanna and Darian.
Jen A.
Right, I heard Jen A. and somebody in Connecticut.
Rifka.
Laura L.
Laura L. And Rifka, I heard you.
Joy B. California.
Joy B.
Barbara
okay,
W.
I heard Barbara W. Let me tell you who I have. And Shanna C, Darian K, Jen A, Laura L, Rifka R, Jody B, Barb W. If you said your name and I didn't call it, can you please give it to me now?
Joy B, California.
I got you, Joy. All right, well, let's go with this lineup. And if you're not Shanna C, please press star 1 to mute yourself. And Shanna, you have the floor. Shanna C, press star 1.
Hey, sorry about that. I thought I did it right, but I didn't, obviously. Good morning. This is Shanna C, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. And so grateful to be on the line. This has been an awesome meeting, and boy, does it strike a nerve, man. So grateful that the steps are outlined and in order the way that they are, you know, getting past the resentments and then getting past that fear and being given the courage after having surrendered somewhat of the fear so they can really take a good hard look at how I'm showing up for the people in my life. It doesn't necessarily have to be intimate relationships. It's how am I showing up for the loved ones, for my family, for my kids, for my whatever. And one of the things that was put quite simply to me is the sex inventory and of course making amends and things like that is how looking at how am I treating God's kids? How am I treating God's princes and princesses? And one of my biggest defects is absolutely 100%, you know, fear being my fabric of my existence is shot through with fear is that constant need for all eyes on me. Why? Because ultimately if I don't have a power greater than myself that I can trust and rely upon, the next best thing is going to be a person. My problem is I'm not, good at depending on a person. Well, I can't just, take a person and understand of my own devices that this person has no human power to relieve me of this ism, this soul sickness that's within me. I forget that very quickly, and the next thing you know, I'm putting claws in these people, expecting them to behave the way that I want, to give me what I want, to give me ease and comfort, the attention, satisfaction, and approval, understanding, companionship that only a power greater than myself can give me. And I forget that reaching out and being a giver is what enables me to experience the ease and comfort that at once alleviates that ism, a few compulsive bites used to be my solution. But now that the food is down, thank God, this is teaching me how to live. So one of my biggest defects is that need for attention and the need for people's accolades and the need for people to be on me, with me, paying attention to me all the time is extreme selfish self-centeredness. And I don't see it because I'm literally just trying to survive. But now that I'm aware, I get to go and use these steps and gain access to real power that enables me to become a giver. And I get the ease and comfort becoming a giver as opposed to being a taker and sucking attention from everybody and using the people that I love that's not responsible for my happiness because they can't give it. How selfish is it of me? Because if in those moments I'm unwilling to believe in a power greater than myself or believe that God can do this for me. Yes, ma'am. How selfish is it to put that on another human being? Because I'm just unwilling to trust that God can take care of me. God forgive me, right? Anyway, that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. And next we have Darian K. from Massachusetts. Darian?
Good morning, Nancy. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, a lot of background, but we can hear you.
Okay. All right. Sorry, yeah, I'm driving. Yes, I'm so grateful to be on the line. And I just so can relate to so much of what everyone's talking about. And isn't it amazing that when I first heard the paragraph read, I was like, wait a minute, this is a story for a guy. It's not us girls, but it's just, we could, there's just so much wonderful sharing about how we can relate and just be a part of the group. I love it. I just love this meeting. I'm going to chime in with the same sort of words as Shanna just shared about wanting approval, wanting people to notice me. And the bottom line, and I don't know if it was, it was trauma as a kid because I was fat. I was a fat kid, a fat teenager, and I was not that cheerleader. I was not that, I wasn't any of the, I wasn't a brain, I wasn't a jock, I wasn't, I didn't fit into any category. I was just a heavy set, maybe fun to be around with a good laugh kind of person, but I wanted to be popular. I wanted to be cool, and I didn't feel that way. And so I got attention was, I think, if anybody, if a mouse on the side of the road gave me attention, I would probably be thrilled because I didn't get that attention, as a kid. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that I can look at this and see that I can give myself the approval that I'm good enough and that I'm pretty enough and that I'm smart enough. And I don't need everyone in the world to tell me that over and over again, because it wouldn't be just once. It would be over and over again. So I can believe it myself. And it's just a joy. It's a joy to know that I can relate to others, that I'm not alone in this world, and that, we have this program to sort of outgrow that immature thinking, but also validate that we're not crazy or broken, but that we're just, you know, we're sick people trying to get better, and that we are, you know, we're unpeeling that onion and realizing that, you know, we have ways that we are, that we've coped with life, and now that the food is down,
a reminder
program. Thank you. We're willing to work a program of recovery. There's a better way. There's a better way than turning to a substance for the numbness. And you know, I appreciate all of you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Darian K. from Massachusetts. And next up, we have Jen A. from Colorado, followed by Laura L. from Connecticut. Jen, you have the floor.
Good morning, Nancy. Good to share a meeting with you, my friend. This is Jen A., recovered in Colorado. By God's grace and mercy, he saved a girl like me from repeating the patterns of domestic troubles. And, you know, this was me for sure. You know, I remember going to my first fifth step with my sponsor, and she's like, so we heard a lot about your ex-husband, but you really didn't say much about this, this, and this. Perhaps in the next hour when you're sitting there, you know, kind of reflecting and looking at those proposals, see if there's anything that stands out to you. And I'm like, there's nothing that stands out to me. Like, he's a total asshole, and, you know, he's the problem. And I was always blaming him. I was always blaming my ex. And then we read in here, but after a few years with a compulsive overeater of a wife, guess what? He gets worn out. My ex-husband got resentful. He got uncommunicative. You know, I was probably 99.9% of the problem, if I go back and look at it, when it comes to the physical and intimate relationships with my ex-husband. I know that today. I didn't know that before. And that's the beautiful thing about this. And I love the fellow this morning that pointed out is you have to put the food down first to get the channel clear so that you can do this work, so that it can become effective and it can affect you. Because I was still eating that first time that I did the fifth step. I was still binging, restricting, exercising, and doing all the things, you know, sucking down pills and potions like nobody's business. But I was an Overeaters Anonymous, and I was showing up to meetings, you know, and I thought I was absent, and I thought I was doing the work, and I was getting those shiny coins one after another. But it wasn't until I got really desperate, until I was doomed. And when I got doomed, and I, you know, I kept repeating these types of things after I got divorced. Hello? Yeah, it's you. It's not him. And the thing that I wrote Saturday in my nightly review, I pulled it up when somebody was speaking today, is I wrote down, we make poor choices because we don't live in the wisdom we have already acquired. I can't acquire any wisdom when I'm clogged up with food, when I'm behaving poorly, when I have no power, no source to guide and direct me, when I'm only looking out for myself. It's the ism, I, self, and me. Today, I'm a different woman. I'm in a relationship. You know, my boyfriend says to me last night, he goes, oh, my gosh. He's like, it's almost been 4 years. I go, I know. I said, 3.5, exactly, you know, because that's just me. He goes, when's the last time you were in a relationship that was that long? And we both got to reflect, you know. And the difference today is that we show up in the relationship doing the things we need to do. And when I wrote down those ideals, I'll just finish with this, Nancy, is, you know, I wrote down those ideals. My sponsor says, I want you to go make a list of all the ways in which you're going to show up in a relationship. And you know what I heard? Write down everything you want in a relationship. And I came back with 4 pages of nonsense and read it to him page by page. And then he goes, go back and do the assignment again. How are you going to show up? That's the greatest gift today, is I get to show up as God's girl in God's relationship, doing God's work. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jen A. from Colorado. Next up, we have Laura L. from Connecticut, followed by Rivka R. Laura, you have the floor.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you, everybody, for your shares this morning. I'm Laura L. from Connecticut, compulsive overeater, and very grateful to be on this line and with all of you today. So yeah, this, I just want to sort of echo almost everything everybody said. I'm not married. For most of my life, marriage was illegal because I'm a lesbian. But I had some long-term relationships, both I probably shouldn't have had and shouldn't have stayed in as long as I did. But before I came to program and even even in the first maybe 7 years, 6 years of program I've been in for 24 years, I had no idea what I was doing, and I was looking for attention. I was controlling. I was all the vanilla, everything that was, all the character defects came up, and more. I mean, I didn't have great role models growing up. I grew up with affairs and divorce and abuse and alcoholism. But there was some love that got through, but I didn't have love of the higher power, of my higher power. I didn't have a really strong fellowship back then because I was just too much into myself. I'm also a workaholic, and talk about cheating. I didn't really make time for people that I was with, that I professed to love, but I didn't really love myself. I was married to my job. I still am, in a way. I was married to food I had to have every night, you know, before I went to bed. That kept me, that was my comfort, was my escape. And I would leave dates early so I could get home and have my food. I mean, it was horrific. And I didn't love myself. I didn't like myself at all. And so how could I possibly be there for somebody else? And I did cheat emotionally in my head. I mean, I didn't, And I was the other woman too. So I didn't cheat on somebody, but I cheated with somebody. So I've done that. Nothing I'm proud of. And just all of it because I was in my head. I was in myself. I was trying to figure out who the hell I was. And I really believed I was absolutely nothing. I had no self-esteem and no self-worth. So that's all the bad stuff. The great stuff is that I have you now. I have program. I have my higher power. I'm not dating. I'm afraid to. And I need to put faith into my higher power and just trust. Yeah, I'm
mental reminder.
Thank you. I'm scared to hurt people again, and scared I will be hurt. So, so thank you all for restoring my faith. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you, Laura L. from Connecticut. Next up, we have Rivka R. Rivka, if you tell us where you're calling from, that would be great. And you have the floor.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you, Nancy, for your service and everyone on the line. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore. I just love this meeting. I love you all. Like, where else can I go and hear exactly how I was? Like, I related to everyone's share. And yes, chocolate chips made the world okay. It made the world pop into color. They were exciting. They were comforting. They made, you know, living worthwhile. I mean, everything I wanted from a relationship, right? But until they weren't. But, you know, relationships were painful. Like, they took effort. They left me vulnerable to be criticized. I had to consider another person. And how many times did I let my husband go to sleep so I could binge, you know? It was really rough. And I was the one that was made it rough. You know, because I was the one who was resentful and uncommunicative and full of fear and self-pity, like somebody said, and blaming all the time. And at one point, my husband actually said to me, you know, when we get old and you finally want a relationship with me, I'll say, no, you blew it. Like, you didn't want a relationship with me all these years, and I wanted one with you. And, you know, like, what happened when he said that? Did I hear him? No, you know, I just got angry and defensive, and you know, which is my usual way of responding. And I'm happy, so grateful, you know, and beyond thrilled to say that with recovery and the humility that, you know, abstinence and these steps and have brought me to, and a relationship with God, that's not the end of our story today. Like, our story is now one of connection and love, and, you know, because recovery and God, changed my heart, changed my perspective. I learned how to give, and as importantly, I learned how to receive. I had no idea how to receive love. You know, now we've been married so far 43 years, and like our relationship is so much more exciting than chocolate chips. Like, and God made these miracles manifest. Like, there was no way on my own that I could have done this and lived this life. I mean, it's only through the power of these steps and, you know, my focus being turned from being totally self-centered to being God-centered and being able to acknowledge and receive a relationship with God, which does heal me and restores me to sanity. And now my husband and I can look at each other, you know, with such admiration and appreciation, and I don't have to change him. He doesn't have to change me. Like, we just can show up, and like someone said...
Mental reminder.
Okay, I'll end it with this. That to be, someone said last week on the line, to be pleasant and present, and it's wild. So anyway, thanks so much, everyone, for being here, and I pass.
Thank you, Rivka R. from Maryland. And next up, we have Joy B., followed by Barbara W., and if each of you could take 2 minutes, that would be great so we can end on time. Joy B., tell us where you're calling from, and you have the floor.
I'm calling from California, and I'm so grateful for the meeting. Thank you for your service. You know, I'm 80, and I'm in my 80s, and I think to myself sometimes, well, you know, you're dead soon. Why worry about this? But it's so important to look back and see, why are you who you are? And I echo so much of what I've heard. I actually used to eat in bed with my husband. I was married at 21 and divorced by 30 and have been alone ever since. Want to know why? Food is my lover. I don't need a husband. Chocolate chips, potato chips, my husband. I mean, into it I have been. And at the same time, I was attending OA meetings. And what were the steps? Okay. They were those things I hear, I rumor, they're in that blue book over on the table, which was mentioned so rarely. And I am telling you, I traveled across San Francisco to go to meetings over and over and over again. And there wasn't this emphasis that a vision has given me on the steps. And I've gone through the steps once. And when people start to talk about sex, I've had enough to talk about it because I've been busy making love to food. And I remember my ex-husband used to get a whisk broom and brush the crackers out of the bed, right? And he used to say to me, you need help. And he was correct. And why didn't I listen? I wouldn't have spent all this time alone. I was busy being fat and the chief intellectual in the room with 3 doctorates and a lot of praise. Well, I'll tell you this, at 80 years of age, that neither hugs you nor talks to you, nor has meals with you. So for all of you who are in here younger, do stick to it, my dear. I didn't, and I so regret it. Thank you. That's it. I pass.
Thank you, Joy B. from California. And taking us out today is Barb W. Barb, please tell us where you're from, and you have 2 minutes. The floor is yours.
I'm Barbara, and I'm from New Jersey, Warren County. And I'm just happy that I have this program, because, you know, I was in this program years back and I had left it, and I've been back now almost 2.5 years. And I can say that my food is great. The way I used to eat, I don't eat that way anymore. I eat a lot of vegetables and fruit, and I have learned to cut meat, because meat was a problem for me. Not that I was overeating it, but it was making me where I wasn't able to breathe good. So I'm glad about that. I can eat a meal. I'm going to say it, cabbage, collard greens, and the grain rice that I have on my program. That's it. I don't have to have meat every day. And I've learned to eat, and my program that I have, it's the sheet that we got, the choice. Dignity of Choice is on one. And you have different ones, and I pick the one that's best for me, for my food, and I try to follow behind it. But my hardest time was for Christmas. Christmas was like a hardest time, because my family, where I was at, they had so much sweets there, and that was my problem. My problem was sweets. I like to have the cake or the cookies or whatever. But I, you know what? I can go now without eating it. You know why? Because I do the steps too. And the steps, even at my church, they have it. Spiritually, steps that we have from the Bible, which is good, that keeps me in control. with other people and my behavior. A lot of times we have problems. People have behavior problems all over the world. They have it all over. And I'm learning to stay in my place, stay in my lane, and stay in my place. And if people, you know, I say it, if you don't like me, if you don't want to be bothered with me, it's okay. It's okay. If you don't want me to call you no more, it's okay. I still love you. I still love you. Because we all have our problems and we have our areas. We have our addiction.
And a reminder.
And I'm thankful to be in this program, even in the one that I go to at 10 o'clock as well. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Barb W. from New Jersey, and thank you for everyone who shared today and made this meeting possible. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today's meeting, February 25th, Tuesday, is 22,194. That's 22194. And we'll now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. And then we'll be following that with the Serenity Prayer. And Jane S., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only until keep you until then.
Thank you, Nancy. I'd love to. My name is Jane S. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, grateful to be of service this month. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.